Good evening, everyone. If we haven't had the chance to meet before, my name is Danny, and I get to serve here as one of the pastors. And I've been out the last few weeks, and it is so good to be back with our community. My family and I got the opportunity to visit some of our family over in Hong Kong for the last 2 weeks, and it was such a special time. In fact, I think we have a picture. This is all of us all together. I know. We had been back to the city since Allie and I lived in Shanghai over a decade ago. And so it was fun to get to go back to Hong Kong and with our family and make memories around the city, around a lot of dinner tables, and around Hong Kong Disneyland for a day. So we had a blast. But of course, like any good and wild trip, it was not without some less than ideal moments. Imagine taking a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old on a 16-hour nonstop flight. Tears, frustration, boredom. Makes sense, right? But I'm not talking about Asher and Abby. They were awesome. I'm talking about me. I was a toddler, and here's why. We stayed the night before in New York City because we had an early flight out. It was a nonstop from New York City all the way to Hong Kong. And so we were going from our hotel area in the city to JFK Airport. And so we got on the air train, which we took into the city, and now we're taking it back out of the city. And when we got on the train, we're almost at the airport. And then all of a sudden, it starts moving the other direction backwards. And we're like, oh no, what's happening? Our flight is coming. And so we were starting to ask people, like, what's going on? They're like, oh yeah, there's maintenance. And then we're like, we were just on this yesterday. That's yesterday. And they're like, oh, it started at midnight. Well, when does it end? Noon. We're like, literally, it's a 12-hour maintenance. Sick. This is great. And so, immediately, I start getting stressed out. I'm like, okay, there's a shuttle. Okay, we need to get on the shuttle bus, and the shuttle bus will take us to the airport. Great, great. And so in the stress, I take off my backpack, and in my backpack is all the things that's going to keep me entertained. So like my Nintendo Switch, my iPad, a book, my headphones, the chargers for the various devices that we have, everything I plan to use on the trip. And then we get off the air train, get onto a shuttle bus. We're on the shuttle bus, and it's heading towards the airport when all of a sudden the air tag on my sunglass case pings that it is going that way, and I am not, because it was on the train in my backpack along with all my other stuff, and I wasn't going that way. And so cue drastic phone calls. I'm like trying to, and so they were able to find the backpack, and I was like, okay, great. Can I get to it? So then we're like checking the clock. Like, is there enough time for me to get to it? There is clearly not enough time for me to get to it. And so my emotions are ping-ponging around. At first I'm like, wow, I'm sensing so much maturity in me. I'm like, it's gonna work out. It's gonna be fine. I'm like, wow, this is like God working in me. Like, this is cool. Like, this is not me in other times. That's great. And then for me to snap at a member of my family, and I'm like, okay, no, I'm still me too. And then I go back to being like the king of chill. I'm like, oh, I'm doing great. And then panic starts to set in as I realize that the next 15 hours of my life is going to be on a plane with none of the shows that I downloaded on my iPad. That moment on the plane became more than just a travel hiccup. I had 15 hours on a plane to do some soul searching and realize that that was a mirror of my heart, that I am a mess of inconsistency. And I think you probably know that mirror too, right? We all know what it's like to be faced with a difficult situation one time and we respond like a champ, like with grace and peace, just for the next similar situation to arrive, and all of a sudden we snap at those who are closest. Now, hopefully you have found yourself able to choose what is life-giving in a moment of temptation rather than caving into temptation. But if you are like me, you've also found yourself caving in the next time around. You're like, man, I thought I was growing. Why do I just go back to the things that I don't want to do? Why don't I do the things more often that I do want to do? Can you think of a time when you surprised yourself? Maybe it was in the best way. Maybe it was in the worst way. And so as I was studying this passage this week, I wanted to know, God, is there hope for a Danny? Is there a hope for me, for you, for us, fickle, forgetful, inconsistent human beings with our consistent track record of inconsistency? Is there hope for people like us? And so in 2 Timothy, where we've been journeying these last few months, Paul answers with a hymn, four lines with two contrasting messages. So this is in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 through 13. And in these four lines, he's going to give two contrasting visions of life. One is about the life with Jesus, and the other is about the life apart from him. Now, this should sound familiar to you if you've been journeying with us over the last few months, because this has been a consistent pattern of how he has been explaining to Timothy what the good life looks like, what it means to be faithful in the midst of the hardship. He's been in this section up until now, kind of the moniker that we have kind of adopted is that what he's been trying to help him to understand is what it means to embrace your calling. Now, something we've talked about a great deal is that Timothy is not exactly a rookie. He has journeyed with Paul for well over a decade, planting churches, helping people to discover what it means to live the life with Jesus. And yet, in this letter, this final letter between a spiritual mentor, father figure, Paul, and Timothy, this spiritual son, he reminds him of some foundational realities that if you are struggling and your friend begins to spout these off, you might be tempted to think, man, you're just making this way too simplistic. But let's dive into this passage together as he kind of brings this section of embrace your calling to a close. So verse 11, the saying is trustworthy. For if we have died with him, we also live with him. If we endure, we will also reign with him. If we deny him, he will also deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. Okay, so there's four lines here. It's kind of a two and two contrasting image, each pair contrasting a way of life. The one path is the life with Jesus, okay? So that's over on this side. And on this side is the life apart from Jesus. And both of these line up is kind of the anthem that he will use to draw this entire section of what it means to embrace your calling to a close. Now, there's kind of a slide that we have used in modification. I wanted to put it up for you tonight, but it is all about embrace your calling. And so this has been through chapter one and into chapter two, where we have been journeying through. So you have Timothy, who has been struggling in the role that he has been given over the last 2 years to pastor a church. And for 2 years, he's worked tirelessly to demonstrate love to these people, to proclaim truth to these people. And what he has been met with is a really hard slog of a job. Have any of you had a hard job and it just doesn't seem to be getting any easier? Many of you have worked for Disney in different areas, so I'm imagining for most of us, we can say yes. And when work is exhausting, when it's tiring, when you don't, does it feel like you're getting the payoff that you feel like you should? You start to grow hopeless. You start to feel the temptation to look for the exit. Timothy has been called here by God. And even in the midst of the difficulties, Paul is now going to speak in, and what he's been doing so far in this letter is speaking in about what it looks like to return to the fundamentals of the faith, the fundamentals of gospel ministry. And the most basic part, what he's been doing so far, is remember who you are. Remember who you are. Timothy, you're not here to chase a paycheck or to be well-liked. Timothy, you are the one who God pursued by faith so that you could respond in faith. And so that's why he his encouragement to ignite imparted faith, that you are in a long line of those who have loved and served God, and you've been invested into by others who loved and served God. So like, fan into flame the embers that are in you. I know it's hard. I know it's difficult, but fan into flame because there's so much beauty there. And then from there, he encouraged him when it came to suffering, because his allegiance to Jesus could be quite costly, just as it was for Paul. Paul at this point is sitting in prison in the capital city of Rome, awaiting his eventual execution. And so what he is getting at is not like, oh, you're following Jesus, that means life should be all easy from here till the end. What he's saying is that even if hard comes, which it will, remember why we do it. It's not because we really, like, Jesus suffered, so you should experience pain in this life. It's not because we somehow owe God a bunch of suffering and brokenness and hate and cruelty so that somehow God would love us in some contorted way. No, it's because we are loved and because the world is opposed to that message of love, that there will be opportunity where difficulty will be experienced in this life. And so what he's saying is, join in the suffering of the gospel. Not to seek it out, not that we are looking for opportunities to suffer, but if suffering comes, don't be surprised. But in all of this, make disciples. Remember why we do it. We don't do it to suffer, we do it to make disciples. We make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. This is the call of Jesus, to come to faith in him and to begin to help others to discover what it means to have faith in him and to discover what it means to follow him as your master, as your savior, and as your teacher. And as you do this, we want to remember Jesus. Constantly come back to the foundation of the faith, the foundation of the gospel, the foundation of the life with Jesus is not our best efforts. It is his grace put on us. See, it is by grace that any of us have been saved, not because Paul or Timothy earned it, not because they stumbled into it, but because God has seen them and adopted them into his family. We talked about at this point how theologian Dallas Willard explained it, that grace is not opposed. Grace is opposed to earning. It is not opposed to effort. There is a necessity of remembering Jesus because it's quick to forget Jesus. That there will be times when following Jesus will not be easy. But whatever the cost, as we remember him, we keep in mind and keep into focus the beauty of what we have received. And then everything else goes, okay, that is hard. That's a really difficult reality. That kind of suffering is costly. But I know what I have received. The treasure I have received outweighs everything else. And so this has kind of been the journey of what it means for Timothy, embrace your calling. And this is what we need as well, that for you and for me, sons and daughters of the King, embrace your calling, because we live in a world that gives you every reason to reject your calling or gives you a modified understanding of, okay, but take up arms. Okay, but get really frustrated. Okay, but just hide and cower. Okay, but just give in to whatever the way the world operates and just do it their way because it'll make your life easier. But what he's saying is that it is absolutely worth it. But if we can imagine, though, for Timothy, reading this letter in the church in Ephesus and all the pressures around him, when things are getting hard around you, like, for example, if you lose a backpack on an air train, it happened to somebody at one point. You can imagine that inconsistency starts to bubble up. Why? Because our brains have shifted into a survival mode, an enemy mode, where we start like looking out for number one, myself. And then there's a part of you that loves Jesus and wants to honor him with your decisions, but then that's fighting against this other part of you that just wants to do whatever it takes to take care of number one. And so Timothy's human. One of the most basic things we can do when we read about any character in the Bible is that they are experiencing things in a similar way to how you would experience it if you were them. These weren't perfect people who had it all figured out. These are people like you and me who would have, if you were in this situation, do you think that you would be pretty anxious? Probably. Frustrated? Probably. Feeling a little bit of hopelessness? Probably. And so here, this section about embracing your calling leads to this anthem. Oh, likely a well-known saying that was a part of a spiritual song, a hymn, that was meant to remind Timothy of truth. And so again, this hymn is broken down into two contrasting couplets. So let's break this down into the two. The first is focusing on the way of Jesus, where he says, if we have died with him, we also will live with him. If we endure, we will also reign with him. Now, if you just look at that language, such a beautiful and honest and costly picture of the journey with Jesus. This first verse is when it says, if we die with him, isn't referring to physical death. That like, if you happen to die a martyr's death, don't worry because you will also live with him. While that is true, that's not the primary usage of that phrase. But this is talking about the death of self. Or as I like to put it, the death of the false self. When Paul writes the church in Rome, in Romans chapter 6, verse 5, he says, for if we have been united with him in a death like his, we shall certainly be united with him in a resurrection like his. What the scriptures teach is that there are two competing forces living within those who follow after God. One, there is the image of God. Every human, the person you are tempted to call like the best human of all humanity and the worst human of all humanity, bears the image of God in them. At creation, God formed us to reflect him to the world around him, to co-rule his creation alongside him. And this gives every single human infinite value. This gives every human, no matter what human, dignity and worth. Because they have the potentiality within them to walk in light and life and freedom. But if you know the story of Genesis very well at all, you know that that image is fractured by this broken desire to define good and bad on our own terms, to do life on our own terms. The scriptures call it sin, death, rebellion. This is the human propensity to do things our own way. And this fractured that image. It didn't do away with it, but it fractures that image. And instead, what we see is another self that begins to take root in the heart of every man, woman, and child. The scriptures often call this the old self, the old man. I like the language of the false self. Because this false self lives within trying to convince us of lies, of everything that is harmful and calling it good. And so that sinful self dwells within, makes living in the fullness of God's image an impossibility. No human can live within the very image of God perfectly because we have this false self dwelling within. And so as long as that sinful self lives, the image of God cannot be fully present. And so cue Jesus on the cross, where he redeems us from our enslavement to death. And he pays the cost so that we would not be owned any longer by sin and death, but that our rights have been claimed by him as his own. This is why German theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer once wrote, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. He says, we put to death that old self. That false self is placed on Jesus on the cross. This is the beauty of the image of baptism. When a follower of Jesus goes into the waters of baptism, what they are doing is they're revealing externally what has already happened internally, that they are united with Jesus in his death. that we have hitched our wagon. We have attached ourselves to him on the cross so that our false self dies with him, putting the sinful self to death. And so then when the follower of Jesus rises up out of the water, what that is meant to symbolize, what that is meant to evoke the image of, is that we have been connected in a life like his. Now, baptism doesn't make us alive. Jesus does, but baptism is a declaration of that. This is why if you believe that you have surrendered your life to Jesus, then we want to encourage you completely to enter into the waters of baptism, because it is following through on a command of Jesus to live your faith out loud, to say, I have united with Jesus in his death so that I could unite with Jesus in his life. And here's the coolest part. If you are baptized, one, you get to be a physical representation to the community of what God has already done. It is the most beautiful reminder that he is at the work of saving people, because I can't make dead people come to life. I haven't done it once. But by the grace of God, his spirit, by his power, does exactly that. But here's the deal. The life with Jesus is not easy. My paraphrase on a quote by Martin Luther is that the old self has been cast into the sea. The false self has been cast in the sea, and that's good. The only problem is the false self knows how to float. So it like just bobs back up, and you're like, no, I thought I didn't we deal with you? And he's like, I'm right here. I'm like a zombie. It just follows you around. And like, that's the tension within the heart of every person who has ever surrendered their life to Jesus. If you find the Christian who's like, oh, I don't struggle with sin at all, then the only answer is that they clearly lack self-awareness, or they're lying, or both. But the reality is that for anyone who follows after Jesus, it's inconsistent. It's inconsistent because the false self knows how to float. And you're just like, oh, how do I tie an anchor to you and like just drop you down? And he just still floats on up. See, it comes with setbacks, this whole following Jesus business. It is, as Eugene Peterson writes about it, a long obedience in the same direction, filled with inconsistencies, frustrations, which, shocker, can sometimes be harder than even, I know, a 15-hour flight without your video game console. I know, it's crazy. And so that leads us to the second part. If we endure, if we endure. So the way of Jesus calls us to endurance. Now, endurance is like a really icky word, especially if you're me or you're us in the culture we live in, because we do not live in a culture that values endurance. That's just not one of our top 10 virtues. Endurance is to stick with it when things get tough. Not instant gratification, not immediate results, not celebrity status, not the fulfillment of our hopes and our dreams. Endurance is to stick with it no matter what happens next. But here's the beautiful output of endurance. If we endure, we will also reign with him. We will also reign with him. That's not a cute spiritual metaphor. According to the scriptures, this is a very real, in fact, it is more real than anything you or I have ever experienced in this physical plane. The creator of the cosmos will one day rule his renewed creation with his renewed image bearers at his side. If you know Jesus, if you follow Jesus, if you've surrendered your life to Jesus, if you put your faith in his saving work, that's your future. It's not up for debate. It's not questioned. It's not if it's true. It is true. It explains Paul's endurance. He clearly had this understanding that this was true. This is why Paul could say that if there was no resurrection from the dead, then all of this other stuff is worthless. Like, the Christian should be pitied before anyone else, he said. But Paul believed it's true. He believed it's true to an extent that he could endure. He could trade what the pain that could last a moment for whatever else, because he has already become the recipient of the thing that lasts forever. He received the kingdom and nothing else matters. Now, if there is no kingdom, then it's not like a good, a moral life. That's not enough. But if it is true, if it is true that if we endure, then we will also reign with him, then this changes the script. Now, this is going to contrast. That is the way of Jesus. It is a way of faith. It is the way of endurance. It's the way of the death of the false self and life into the true self. But the hymn contrasts it with a very different vision, right? The vision of life apart from Jesus. He says, if we deny him, he will also deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. Now, oftentimes, questions are asked about what kind of sin leads to eternal separation from God, from hell. Are there like some super sins? And sometimes in the Christian world, there are certain sins that are believed or proclaimed as if it was a super sin. Are there certain sexual sins? Are there certain sins of speech or thought or action? How about sins that can never be repented of, such as the taking of one's own life? Could those things separate somebody from God? But this hymn here reminds us that our eternity is not connected to individual choices of sinfulness, just as it cannot be connected to individual choices of righteousness. This is why C.S. Lewis once said, there are only two types of people in the end, those who say to God, thy will be done, and those to whom God says, in the end, thy will be done. This is what it means to deny him. To deny him is to believe, to desire, and to live apart from Jesus and his way. Not just in a moment, but in terms of eternity. It's not about momentary decisions. It is about a lifetime of denial. And if we deny him, what it reveals is that we were never actually his all along. This isn't about a stumble. It's not about a bad day. It's about a settled position of rejection. Now, to kind of, that can seem kind of like in the clouds, kind of like theoretical or ethereal to me. And so as I was talking over with some of my friends, what was coming to mind, and I could only imagine for the earliest followers of Jesus that this would have, that there would have been a particular story that would have come to their visions. And that would have been the story of Peter. Peter, the most inconsistent of Jesus' knuckleheads, I mean, disciples. So here's the scene. It's the hours before Jesus' arrest. And Jesus declares at dinner over all of his followers that they will all fall away with him within hours. Now, this isn't a threat. It's a clarity. It's a call to attention. Hey, just so you guys know, this is what's going to happen. Don't be surprised. But Peter, being Peter, misses the point entirely. And he says to Jesus, even if I must die with you, I will not deny you. Now, we know where the story goes, so it sounds silly and stupid. It's like, Peter, we know what's about to happen. But for Peter, we could just imagine the sincerity. Wouldn't you want to say that in sincerity to Jesus if you were sitting at the dinner table with them? Not me. And then I love it. All the disciples said the same. They're like, me too, me too, me too. He's like, no. But Jesus isn't asking for a recommitment ceremony. He is clarifying that in the next few hours, you need to minimize the shock about what's about to happen. So Jesus is taken off by the Roman guards in the dead of night. And as early morning is beginning to bustle, Peter is sitting outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl comes up to him and says, you also were with Jesus the Galilean. But he denied it before them all, saying, I do not know what you mean. And he went to the entrance. Another servant girl saw him, and she said to the bystanders, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again, he denied it with an oath. I do not know the man. After a little while, the bystanders came up to him and said, certainly you too are one of them, for your accent betrays you. We know what you sound like. We know where you're from. Then he began to evoke a curse on himself and to swear, I do not know the man. And immediately the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the saying of Jesus that before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. And he went out and he wept bitterly. Now, we don't know who wrote down this ancient hymn originally in the early church that Paul is citing, but it's hard to imagine that this narrative is not in this person's mind. The tension of denial in a moment like Peter versus denial for eternity. Have you ever felt like you failed God? Like this time, that was too big. This leads us to the fourth verse. If we are faithless. If we are faithless. I'm sure I'll bring this up in just a few weeks when we get into Advent and Christmas time. I think I say this just about every year. But my favorite Christmas carol is, O Come All You Faithful. Except my next thing I usually say is that I wish the title was changed to, O Come All You Faithless. O come, all you faithless. O come, you who doubt. O come, you who are frustrated. O come, you who are inconsistent and forgetful. O come, all ye faithless. If we are faithless. See, this is the grace found in the fourth line of this hymn, that if we are faithless, he remains faithful. If we deny Jesus eternally, then he will deny us eternally. But that's not his goal. That's not his desire. That's not his disposition towards humanity. We see that this in the redemptive interaction between Jesus and Peter on the shores of the sea as the resurrected Jesus enjoys breakfast with the boys one last time. This comes from John 21. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus says to Simon Peter, you could imagine Simon, imagine Peter just sitting there going, oh my gosh, like still great. Jesus is resurrected. Good news. But like, how do you not still have your shame on your brain? And he says to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. And he said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? We could imagine why he's grieved, why he's grieving. He's testing me because I am such a failure. But once again, Peter's missing the point. Jesus says to him, feed my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and will carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. Let's pause there. This is Jesus foreshadowing to Peter his future. That one day in a few decades from then, he would be crucified. And according to church tradition, it would be upside down because he didn't believe himself worthy to be killed in the same manner as Jesus. And so that's what he's talking about. Your hands would be stretched out. You would be dressed not by yourself, by another. You will go where you wouldn't want to go. What is he saying? Embrace your calling. Well, that's an awful calling. But what is he saying? Peter, you just denied me three times. I have all the reason in the world to believe that you would deny me a fourth time. But he's saying, Peter, that's not you. I know that there's going to be a day when you won't deny me to the point of death. And after saying this, he said to him, follow me. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. Jesus remains faithful even in Peter's worst moment of his life. And he calls on Peter to embrace his calling, a calling that if it was possible to disqualify himself from, he definitely did. Like, would you follow a pastor if he's like, yeah, three times? I was like following Jesus pretty tight. And then I was like, nah, like three times. How did you grow from that moment? Like, I need some details to know that you're not just the worst. Who does that? But Peter is no longer defined by his best or his worst, his moments of faithfulness or his moments of faithlessness, because he is attached to the one who is eternally faithful. That even when he is faithless, he remains faithful. Which is why it ends with this simple refrain, for Jesus cannot deny himself. Now, to deny oneself is to act contrary to your calling or to your nature or to your character. In that terms, do you ever deny yourself? Yes, you're human. You might value honesty or integrity. And do you operate under those terms 100% of the time? Probably not, because we're inconsistent humans. But that's not God. He is always acting in accordance with himself. God's not like us. He's not uncaring or unkind no matter the moment. His heart is broken for those who are brokenhearted. Now, I wish I could say that I was that inconsistency on my trip was only a momentary thing whenever I remember my backpack issue, which hopefully will be resolved this week. But the reality is that there were days on that trip when I was absolutely cheery and filled with a ton of excitement. And I'd like wake up on the right side of the bed. And I just felt really close to Jesus and the people around me. And there were other times on that trip where I was deeply irritable, when I was annoyed, and I 100% believe I was annoying. And I wish I could say that, well, that's just when I'm like out of my comfort zone, out of my norm, like world traveling edition Danny does that kind of stuff. But everyday version of Danny does this other kind of stuff. But that's not true. Everyday Danny struggles. Everyday y'all struggles. We struggle. Inconsistency is very human. It allows us to make exceptions. It allows us to be flexible, but it also allows us to inflict great harm on ourselves and on other people. But God remains faithful to his character and his nature. And because he does that, we can trust him even when everything in our life looks absolutely horrid. I am not fully trustworthy, and neither are you. And I'm okay with that. And I hope you can be too. Because we serve a God who is not. A God who is perfectly capable. Because we never have to wonder if God cares about injustice towards the poor or oppressed. Because we know in the scriptures, by seeking his character, that his heart is always with them. We don't have to wonder if God cares about people who misrepresent him for personal gain. Because we know what God thinks of those who do that kind of stuff. We don't have to wonder if God loves us, even in our most broken moments. Because the scriptures give us that clarity. This is the good news that Timothy needed to remember, that his calling was meant to be embraced, not because everyone would love him for it, not because it would be easy, but because the God of the universe invited a Timothy into his story. God of the universe invites a Maggie into the story, invites a Deshaun into the story, invites a Daniel into the story. The God of the universe invites us, Kellers and Marys, Christians and Liams. He invites us into the story with him. He invites us to join him, to embrace the calling that is on our lives, to join him in going after the one more, to join him in proclaiming the good news of Jesus to those in our life and in our orbit. Not because you are perfect or perfectly consistent, but because he is. And if you're waiting to be perfect to the point that you can start demonstrating love to other people or talking to Jesus about Jesus to your coworkers, that day isn't coming. but because he is faithful, because he will not deny us, because he has called us to live and to reign with him, because he has given us this anthem, we can live in this as an individual and as a people, inviting each of us to reflect and draw near to the one who called us his own. See, God's faithfulness doesn't excuse our inconsistency, but it does transform it. This is the journey of sanctification, of becoming more like him. And so I want to invite the band to come on up right now. And what I want to invite us to do is to spend a few minutes in reflection. On the screen behind me, we're going to put up three questions. And if you're a note-taking kind of person, consider writing these down. Answer them right now or ponder over them and answer them this week. So we're going to take a few minutes to just reflect. Just reflect in the stillness of your heart with God. The first question is, what calling has God called you to embrace? The second one is, who in your life is God calling you to share the gospel with? And the third is, what would it look like for you to live in the life with Jesus rather than apart from him? I want you to go ahead and just take a few minutes and just kind of meditate, stir on those questions. Talk to God about those. Encouragement for you tonight is to talk with somebody about this. If you're a follower of Jesus, if you have another friend in the room who you know, share with them before you leave here tonight about those answers, about those reflections, maybe on the way home. If you're here tonight, though, and you do not know Jesus, all this following him business sounds maybe weird, maybe interesting, maybe somewhere in between. Know that this is a safe community to discover, to ask questions, to be open and honest and raw about where you're at in your journey of faith. To know this, the God of the universe loves you. It's by no accident that you're here tonight. That you would come to know his love for you. So, Father, right now I lift up every person who is in this space, every person who desperately needs to know of their belovedness by you, every inconsistent person who needs to know that you are the one who does the real work. and that your character, your nature is perfect. Lord, I pray that we, your kiddos, would just experience your calling, would experience your love, and would embrace that each of us is called to carry it to those in our lives. Yes, Father, we need you more than we know. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.